recordings are rolling, sir. KY6-way.
Good evening, everyone. This is South Garth, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. Information regarding our HF operation may be found at www.southgarth.com and for our digital operation at www.voip.southgarth.com. Your moderator for this session is KJ4WKD, and my name is Jim. I'm located in Greensboro, North Carolina. Let's get started. Tonight's TNT is going to be an informal discussion about preparedness in the event of a weather-related emergency or any other emergency, and very informal, rag-chew style. We'll talk about how to survive a few days camping out in your own home. We will be talking mostly about what items to be sure that you have on hand, and what experiences that you might have had in these situations, what you did right, what you did wrong, what you will do next time to do better. So with that, let me drop a second, and we'll cover some of the very basic items first to have on hand. But some of the very basic, which everyone should be aware of and should know about, that you can read on the various websites and you think about, would be candles or perhaps oil lamps and fuel for those, matches, lighter. You know, if you're going to have, if we're talking a lot about a power outage rather than the Aries or the Races type preparedness tonight. And this would be not leaving your home with a go bag, but remaining in your home and toughing it out for a few days. So you don't have matches or a lighter for sure. Good flashlights and our battery lanterns and batteries for those. You'll need batteries, by the way, for all of your devices that you have in your home. Keep batteries in the refrigerator. They last longer. And I would recommend the alkaline type. They usually have a shelf life of about 5 years. And in the refrigerator, of course, that's extended. Something like the Duracell Copper Top, or I'm not sure what the EverReady trade name is, but you're familiar with those batteries, the long-lasting alkaline type. So with those few items, and they're basic, and there are a few more basic that I think are basic that you'd want to have, let me open the floor up and see if who might want to come in and add to that list. Go ahead now. Any stations who are connected who'd like to add to a list of basic items that you want to have on hand during a power outage that might last a day or several days?
Sierra United Zulu.
Okay. That's here one station. My backup, Suzanne, in Connecticut, who I think just experienced a power outage of a, thankfully, a short duration. But go ahead, Suzanne. Susie. What's on your list? And maybe you could share what happened and what you would recommend in your fresh memory. Go ahead, N1SUZ. This is KJ4WKD.
Well, thank you very much, Jim. This is N1SUZ. And yes, here in Connecticut, we just experienced a freak storm that left about 61% of all of Connecticut without power. And that was due to heavy snow, down power lines due to the snow, trees breaking, branches falling, and really it looks like a hurricane came through here, actually, because there are still many, many streets that are impassable due to down trees and electrical wires that are hanging all over. We lost power at about 9 o'clock on Saturday evening, which you know because I was hosting a net with you and lost power. And we didn't get our power back until Monday morning, about 3 o'clock in the morning. Let me drop it here for a second. And so, and during that time, there were quite a few things that passed through my mind that I wish I had, but let me tell you about what I did have. One of the best things I had was a camping lantern. We had flashlights, but the camping lantern was really what helped us walk around the house. I was able to carry that everywhere a lot easier and threw out a lot more light than your normal flashlights. And, of course, the next thing that I had that I was glad I had was a transistor radio, a battery-operated transistor radio with fresh batteries in it, I might add, in order to keep track of what was going on in the area, the outages, and all that kind of stuff. But that's what we did for light. Other things that came in handy were charcoal. I couldn't use the stove because no electricity, but I do have a charcoal grill outside, and I was able to make food on that, which was good. And what heated the house was a wood stove, which I had installed a few years back, and I love it. And that's how we kept warm in the house. And BJ appreciated that, but he did enjoy the cold weather himself. So let me send it back to you, Jim, and looking forward to hearing a lot more suggestions because definitely I think it's going to be a bad winter here in Connecticut. This is N1SUZ back to KJ4WKD.
Well, thank you, Susie. Appreciate that firsthand experience and a recent one. Yeah, it's a lot of a wood stove. It's not something you would go out and just have on hand. It's just great when you have one. And I'm assuming that you had firewood, had wood put in there ready and on hand and dry, stored somewhere. So that was cool, or warm. So there you go. And I'm reading, or did read, that I think the not only was, it wasn't a, maybe a big snowstorm, but it's, there are a lot of leaves on still on the trees, and that held the snow and caused them to break more than they normally would maybe later in the year. Is that correct? Is that what really happened, or is that a lot of the, is that something that really exacerbated the situation in New England? Susie, back to you, KJ4WKD, calling once again for N1SUZ.
Oh, this is N1SUZ. Yes, I think the leaves on the trees did exacerbate the problem a bit, but it was really the type of snow. It wasn't a light snow. It was a very heavy snow. Very wet snow, and also with the freezing temperatures, because we had really, really cold nights here, that kind of made it even worse. What happened, you know, you had a lot of trees down. And still, there are, like I said, there's so many roads that are impassable. 100% of electricity customers are out in a town just next to me, and it's amazing. They say that they might get 90% of the customers back online by the end of next week. Back to you, Jim.
Wow, that sounds like hotel time if it's going to be that long. We're talking here tonight, hopefully, about, just a few days, a couple of three, 4 days, and that's what we experience usually around here. And by the way, we're in North Carolina, are not immune to power outages because it could happen, well, you know, these storms, all sorts of storms happen, and they happen in the summer as well as the winter. But here we have, in the winter, we have ice storms, what we call ice storms. That's freezing rain. And, of course, that adheres to the trees, the limbs, and the power lines, and all of those things, and brings them down. So that usually results in a power outage for us rather than snow. We don't get a lot of snow, but we do get those nasty ice storms here, so... and it can happen to anybody, pretty much any season. I mean, this, you could classify this as still autumn, and you've already had a major snowstorm, so you never know. Thank you, Susie. Stick around. We'll be back to you, I'm sure, and come back in often with more of your tips and preparedness information. Thank you. And let me open it up once more for anyone else who has come aboard or has some things to add to the list or some other experiences that doesn't have to be this year, but any time in your lifetime you've gone through a major storm or a power outage. And what did you learn and what can you share with us? KJ4WKD with the TNT Open Forum on surviving camping out in your own home during a power outage. Anyone anywhere want to come aboard and share with us? Do so now.
Six Victor, sir.
Anna Lima, Charlie Bravo.
Okay, we got a couple of survivors out there. Gordon, KY6V, and Lima, Charlie Bravo, George down in Florida. Florida knows about those storms. So let's go to the top of the list and pick up KY6V. Come talk to us, Gordon.
Thanks, Jim. Thank you, Susie, and I'm sure happy to see you in there tonight, too, George. Back to back, we can probably tell you a bunch of tales. But, you know, when you started this here a few minutes ago, I just quickly got my pen out. And right off the top of the gray matter, I started jotting down items, Jim, some of which you and Susie have already covered. I think it took me about 30 seconds to come up with something like 15, and I'm not going to go over them all. But, you know, it also occurs to me that some of us are fortunate in some of the experiences that we run into, like the hurricane season, the situation that was coming in on Connecticut that just happened, New England. We had some warning. Gave people a chance to try to climb over all of the other thousands of people that went down to Walmart and Home Depot and so on and so forth to get their survival equipment. It's a little late to do that, but at least we've had some warnings. These poor people out in the middle of the United States don't know when they're going to have a tornado come down their stovepipe. They may have 10 seconds warning, and they better be prepared. So let me quickly go over my list. Let me buy a nickel. You know, you need to have some canned goods on board, give you some survival for a number of days. Don't wait till the last minute to go down to the store to get something like that. You need bottled water. You don't know when you're going to lose your city water, if that's what you're using for drinking, or lose your electricity and you don't have any well water coming up the pipe. Flashlights you already talked about, candles you already talked about, matches you already talked about. Fuel for your charcoal grill. And I don't care if it's this type or that type of energy needed to get the fire going, but you may want to boil some water and you don't have any other way to do it. If this situation coming in on you has got a lot of wind involved in it, you know, you have to get out, pick up the loose items outside, get them inside, get them stowed someplace so they don't become missiles when the storm gets to you. You know, you just have to be on your guard. Top off your gas in your car, Jim. I think that's very important. And don't wait to the last day or the day before the last day because there's going to be 50,000 people in line at the pump. Second guess this baby if it's coming in. Have a full tank. Give you a chance to get around and do what you have to do after the blow goes by. You know, there's just a whole bunch of things that we can think about here. A communication plan with a family. If the family gets separated, hey, where are we going to meet? Who are we going to use as a central communicator? How do we stay in communication? Back to you, Jim, and watch out for this guy from Key West coming up. KY6V, over.
Oh, I'm screwing up my courage to talk to George, and I'm sure you'll have something interesting for us and probably some wisdom about these things. And, yeah, I've got most of those things, Gordon, on my list, and we can talk about those some more. I've got a couple of lists here. I've got the basic items, and then we'd like to cover tonight, and hopefully with some help from everyone, some items that we don't necessarily think about or we might have forgotten that's good to have. So we'll do that too. But right now, let's go back down to Florida and let's look for KW4 Lima Charlie Bravo George coming through his link in Florida. George, come join us, sir.
Well, good evening, Jim, and thank you for doing the net. What can I say, Jim? You know, we're no stranger to the rain as far as hurricanes and ice storms. So, but I happen to think of a product that a whole lot of people don't think about there. But, you know, these little outside patio lights or yard lights that runs off in 12-volt system there, without too much of a problem there, you know, that could, a plug could be wired on that, and you can hook that up to a 12-volt supply, either being an automobile or a generator someplace for inside lighting, because the string is fairly long with, you know, what, 12, 15 lights or whatever. You could string that out if you wanted to do a little bit of engineering work. You could even cut the wires and put switches in there to control how many lights into an area that you want at a given time. But there's all kind of things that one might think about. Let me take a pause here. I did hear Sue said she had a wood stove there. Now, didn't hear her say if she had a wood cook stove or a wood burning heater. But either one, you know, works just fine for cooking. You know, one knot is one is a little bit slower than the other. You could only do so many things, but you can survive with either one. I have had to go out and grab buckets of ice and melt them on the stove for a water there. And as far as, you know, the freezing and all, like you said, you got rain in there, moisture was in the air, heavy snow, and them old tree limbs get soaked up so bad and start freezing, and every breeze comes through there, starts sticking to that limb, and before you know it, you've got all kind of weight, and especially if a tree is leaning in one direction more than the other, that limb or that tree is going to come down, and Lord knows what it's going to take when it does come down. I will say one should have a good chainsaw around and enough gas and all to keep that going. Good set of hand tools, you know, a hammer, a bow saw if you don't have a chainsaw. They'll work just as good, not as quick, but they will work, you know. And there's all kind of things one might could find that they can use to survive with. But Gordon mentioned communications there, and one thing it's good to have, it's a network of friends. You know, you really need to check your friends out, those that you can depend on. We all, you know, at this point in time, you know, we all have our needs, and one hand washes the other. So if you have a group of friends that you can work with, you know, you can take care of your own and help take care of this, and they help take care of yours, and, you know, it goes on and on and on. So, gotta keep the faith, you know, are you a survivor or not, you know, and, there's so many little things, that one can do for himself, because, you're not gonna be able to have a plumber come in there or electrician come in there, you know, so you got to think a little bit, and what can I say? I can go on, but let me turn it back to you. KW4 Lima, Charlie Bravo.
Oh, thanks, George. A lot of good stuff there, a lot of good advice. Thank you, sir.
And you mentioned, I've got most of the things on my list that you guys have mentioned, have covered off. But I didn't have the hand tools and the chainsaw. Now, that's that could come in very, very handy, especially that chainsaw. And, of course, you want to have fuel for that. And if you're using, like mine does, if you're using a oil-gas mixture, you want to have that all mixed and ready to go. And topping off the car with gasoline, yeah. And I would recommend maybe having a 5-gallon container of gasoline stored safely at home. And throughout the year, you can rotate that through the car, pour it into the car, and take the container and refill it. So I think most gas these days is pretty stable. It'll go from year to year, but you have to be careful about letting the gas get old. But one thing to do is just rotate it through your automobile and refresh it. And, you know, another thing about the getting gasoline, whether they're long lines or whatever, if you have a power outage, a major power outage, most of the gasoline pumps are not going to work. You know, they won't pump any gasoline for you, and they certainly won't take your credit card or your debit card. So there you go. But let's look at a few more things here. And thanks, George. Thanks, Gordon. And hopefully you guys will be back with us as we move through the program tonight. Yeah, I did have a transistor radio for communication. And, of course, you want a battery radio. Or what's really handy is one of those crank-up. You crank up the crank it a few cranks, and that builds up a battery inside. And it'll last, well, I guess in proportion to how many times you crank it. But you need no battery. It'll work all the time if you crank it up. And charcoal. Have charcoal on hand if you have a charcoal grill, which is what I have. And I have usually try to have a 20-pound bag in backup all of the time because I use it. So, and, of course, the firewood and the burn inside. Are, you can, you know, you, firewood is good, too. You can build a fire outside. You know, have some wood dry and available. Hopefully you can do that safely outside if you really, really have to cook and to even for to go out there and get warm. And all of us, as I mentioned, can't have a wood stove. Or we don't have the space or just, you know, to go to the expense. But maybe we can have a kerosene heater, such as one of, I guess the brand name is Kerosene, and they don't smell like kerosene like they did at one time. I guess they still have a little odor. Kerosene odor to them, but if you have one of those on hand, they do a great job of heating several rooms, one of those heaters, kerosene. And kerosene is readily available. You'd want to have a good supply of kerosene. I would recommend at least a 5-gallon can of that ready. And that goes pretty fast, by the way, so you might want to have more if you expect a long outage. Clean canned food, of course, as mentioned, clean potable water. And the recommended amount of water to have would be what I guess the Red Cross recommends is 1 gallon per person per day of potable water. And, of course, if you have snow outside or rain, you can boil that. Or you might want to have, most of us have chlorine bleach on hand, and a few drops of that in a gallon of water will help to purify your melted snow or melted ice, if you've had to make water or get it out of a stream somewhere, if you forget to store up your drinking water. So,
Sierra United Zulu.
And 6, Victor.
Susie, you're at the top of the list. Go ahead with your contribution.
Well, thank you, Jim. This is N1SUZ. I just wanted to make a couple comments before we went on. George had mentioned a chainsaw and having hand tools on hand, and I had never thought of that about that too much, the value of a chainsaw. But one of our friends was blocked access. The whole road on both sides of where she lived was blocked by trees, downed trees. And luckily they had a chainsaw because she and her boyfriend and a neighbor cut the trees down that were blocking at least one side of the road, one part of the road, so they could get out. They had no electricity or anything, and they had no access to being able to get out of there either until they cut those trees down that was blocking the road and moving them. So a lot of sweat equity there, and they were able to get out and into their car and get somewhere else where they could get some food and shelter. And I would kind of like if George would come back, or maybe you can address this, Jim, about cooking on the wood stove. Now, my wood stove is a soapstone wood stove. It's got a soapstone top, so it's got a soft top. But normal wood stoves, I imagine, are cast iron. And I'd like someone to talk about cooking on that, because I think that would be a great idea to use the wood stove for something else besides heat. So I'll send it back to you, Jim. This is N1SUZ. Back to KJ4WKD.
Thanks, Susie. Growing up, when I was quite young, we heated with a it was very much like a wood stove, but it was we had coal delivered outside and had a pile of coal, which I really liked to play in. That was fun. And we burned coal in it, but I know that that thing was really hot. It was cast iron, and you could cook on it if you really wanted to, boil water, whatever. Now, I have no knowledge or no experience with soapstone. I understand that that is a very good, it holds heat very well, then radiates it even when your embers are in the stove, or you don't have a raging fire in there like in the middle of the night when you haven't soaked it up, but it'll continue to radiate heat. So George or Gordon is next, but let me see if George has an experience with a soapstone wood stove. George, Lima Charlie Bravo, you want to come back in and address that suspicious question?
Well, I don't think I've never used one, Jim. You know, I'd have to see it there, because anything such as that, in an emergency, I'm quite sure there's a way to modify it to cook on there. You know, I remember the old flat iron cook stoves. I do remember the old what we call a pot bellied coal would burn coal that was brick lined inside would burn wood or coal, and some of your old time morning glory stoves there, you know. And I have been in a position where I have used them all, and even had to when I was out in the yard grab me a 55 gallon a steel drum and cut a couple holes in the bottom of it so it can draw air, and you know, threw wood in that. Mostly used it for a rubbish, but when you're out there working around when snow's up past your knee bone there, every once in a while you need to come by something and get you warm there. But sorry about that. Any of the other stoves there, we might talk to you about there. Sure make some good biscuits on it. Ain't no doubt about it. And there ain't a biscuit ever better made than one come off of, or inside off, either inside or out of a good old wood-burning stove. KW4 Lima, Charlie Bravo.
You mentioned I think the soapstone, I believe it will discolor, and maybe there's a way that you can elevate your cooking surface and not cook directly on it. But, you know, oh, I know what it was, George, the good old 55-gallon drum. Now, I mentioned earlier having a fire outside, and that's an excellent way to do it. It gets done quite frequently all over the place, so a 55-gallon drum will make a nice fireplace on the outdoors. But with that, we'll break with you, George. Thank you. And move over to KY6V. Gordon, your comments, sir.
Well, thank you, Jim. KY6V here. Just thinking about your comment about the 55-gallon drum, you know, it's amazing, just absolutely amazing how many things you can do with a 55-gallon drum. Jim, you had me laughing about playing in the coal. I'll bet you look just like Al Jolson, you know, just before a performance. My only comment is that I wanted to talk about having water available, and I've been doing this for years now. I'm not sure where I picked up on the technique, but you've got an incoming storm that's supposed to be nasty. I'll make sure that the bathtub is clean, and then I'll fill that bathtub right up to its output gunnels with water. And then you can use that water to survive on. You know, you may have to, and probably should, boil it once you dip it out of the bathtub. But it's a great oasis in the storm. Something that should not be overlooked. It's one great big pot of water that you're probably going to need. KY6V, back to you, sir.
Okay, good idea. KJ4WKD here. I hope you've got two bathrooms, Gordon, because you might want to bathe at some point as well. And I bet George puts liquids in his too. He may make that bathtub gin down there. I don't know. He's very ingenious and creative with the bathtub. I would bet he is. So he'll comment on that a little later. So with that, thanks guys, as always. Thank you for contributing. Important stuff here tonight. Let's look at some other things, and some of these we've covered already. Things to think about that might get left off of some list. Maybe not. Depends on how astute you are and how well you prepare and think it through. Let me reset a second. Okay. A camp stove, such as one of the Coleman camp stoves that uses liquid fuel and have fuel on hand, even if you don't go camping, those things, I had one, I think it's finally just died a natural death, but you put the liquid fuel in and you pump it up, and it, with aerosol, it works great. Nice hot fire to cook on. But if you have a gas grill, a propane grill, that's something else. I mean, you've already got a gas stove right there on your patio, on your deck, or just out back somewhere. So, and again, keep an extra propane cylinder on hand, and a good thing to do is have two. Be using one and have one full backup. And then when one runs out, you switch it out and take your other one back for a swap out or a refill. So then you always have that that full one on hand. I mentioned the chlorine bleach. The chlorine will evaporate in 24 hours out of your water, your tap water. So I'm not sure how many days you'd want to trust it in the bathtub, but a little extra chlorine as well as boiling would help that. Let's see, what else? Here's something. Hardwired, or in other words, a non-cordless house phone. If you have a landline, if you depend on a landline, or if you have a landline in addition to your cell service. Landlines, I no longer have one, but they are more dependable, really, than cell service. Cell service can go out, especially and they could get overloaded in a real emergency. So it's good to have a landline. And of course, you know that if you have a cordless phone, a portable phone that you carry around with a base somewhere in the house, like in a bedroom, that's got a battery in it and it's got to recharge, and that's not going to last forever. So you can get a $10 dial push-button phone at Walmart or wherever, and have that, you know, stick it in the drawer and have it ready to plug in when you're out of electricity, because the phone lines do work on batteries, and that's why they stay up when the electricity is off. So let me let it drop a second, and we're into items that you might not think of, or you know, that you've needed and did not have when you've been through a power outage. So let me open it up for any contributions to that. What would you want to have next time? What did you have on hand that served you well? Come back and share with us. Anyone, anywhere, this is KJ4 WKD with the TNT Open Forum, surviving a power outage in your own home, camping out in your own home. Anyone who's been there, done that, and is prepared to do that, come aboard now and contribute to the discussion tonight.
A comment about the chlorine, Jim, when it fits. KW4 Lima Charlie Bravo.
KW4 Lima Charlie Bravo, KJ4 WKD. Fits any time, George. Come aboard now.
Well, you know, nowadays, Jim, you could go into Walmart or any other big store, and a whole bunch of little stores, too, for a matter of fact. And you could get these little packages of granulated chlorine there, which, you know, I buy for my spa. What I usually do, I'll just go ahead and take a couple spoonfuls out of the bag and put me a little water up in a pail, and I dilute it that way, and then just pour it into the spa. You know, it works a little bit quicker and a little bit better. So, you know, it doesn't hurt to have a couple of them little bags. They only are about 3 inches wide, maybe 8 inches long, you know, just throw it in on a shelf or cupboard somewhere, you know, for a time to keep in. And you could also, you know, pick you up a little, couple other chemicals there for your water, and just have it in the box there. I also put down ropes, and if you got you know, you can pick you up a 12-foot a chain of some kind, you know, that's always good to have. Just like Sue mentioned, the neighbor down the street, you don't have to cut all them limbs up in a real small pieces. If you could just cut it big enough to hook a chain on it and drag it out of the way, you could always come back later and cut it up in a smaller pieces. And at the same time, when you're cutting it up smaller, cut it up in sizes that you can use in a fireplace or a old 55-gallon drum. You know, like I said, the power is out, gas stations is closed down, food stores is being overrun with people, and people is getting a little bit on the greedy and the chaotic side. So, you know, whatever the best thing you can do is just, you know, just stop, look around you, see what you've got, see what you need to get, you know, to keep you going for a couple weeks, you know, like I said, and I'll make it through it, you know. There's always something there that someone can use if they stop and think about it. KW4 Lima, Charlie Bravo, back to you. And there's a whole bunch of things, Jim, but I'll just sit back and I'll let it go on and see whatever else, you know, that I can pull out my ditty bag. You know, like I said, the hurricanes caught in the snowstorm, didn't have power and didn't have a heat or fuel and all. We had to make it through it the best way we can. And absolutely, if you got a barbecue grill or a little gas grill, I mean, boy, I'm telling you, you uptight and out of sight if you got that luxury, because it just reminds me of the old-timey gas stoves. The new one nowadays, you have to have electricity to even get them turned on. So, Lisa, with that, and one other thing about them grills, you know, them long lighters, they're fairly cheap there. They are good for...
Time down, George. pick it back up.
Purple Crystal Award, Jim. He's still talking.
Yeah, we'll have to print that up and send it to him, Jordan. Guess we can print it and do it. So, George, you back with us yet? Are you? Well, I think he is still talking.
No, I'm listening to you talking about me.
Well, that was Gordon talking about you, George. I wouldn't say an unkind word about you, sir. Let me put a little something that I've got here. I don't want to forget because it's really, really, really important in a power outage, and that would be absolutely sure, and have some pre-ground coffee on hand or a manual coffee grinder. You gotta have coffee, guys. And if you got a grinder, if you grind your own like I do, and you don't have any ground, it's going to be pretty tough. If you have an electric grinder, and you have a coffee maker that is electric, how are you going to make coffee? Well, one thing you can do is, everybody's throwing out an old coffee maker. Well, I like to say the carafe and the brew basket, the plastic brew basket that goes with it, and some filters, and coffee. You're going to have filters left over when you coffee maker dies, and you can just boil water and pour it through the grounds out of your tea kettle or whatever, and make your coffee that way. Or you can buy Melita makes one of those. It's already set up to the carafe and the brew basket, but you don't have to do that. You can just use an old one. Or the best way to make coffee, they tell me, and I don't have one, is a French press. And if you have one of those, that's you brew coffee by pouring hot water in it anyway. So that's a good thing to have on hand. You have delicious coffee all the time, and a good, neat way to make coffee without any electricity. So let me drop it there and pick up whoever wants to come back in with more tips or experiences or wisdom for us. KJ4WKD with the TNT Open Forum.
You've got me absolutely roaring here in the background, Jim. KY6V, whatever happened to the percolator? Over.
You know, I don't know. And I was thinking about an electric percolator, but you can still go to your old hardware stores and buy the, I guess they're probably sold to campers, a percolator that you put on a fire. So, that would be a good idea to have on hand. Along with some ground coffee. And by the way, you could put the ground coffee in the freezer and freeze it and have it ready. And if you buy a bag pre-ground without opening it, it's vacuum sealed, and it's going to last quite a while in the refrigerator or the freezer. So,
well, Jim, I grew up with coffee and using a sock. And this is what they called a sock, which was about a 3-inch metal type ring, or a ring, which a little cloth piece of material was tied around it, and it made a bag. You boiled your water on the stove. When it got up to the right temperature, you dump your coffee in it. You let it cook up and boil. Just as it starts to rise up there good, you cut the heat down, you let it set a minute, and you poured it through that sock as a strainer that collected the grounds. And quite a few homes in the South is still using that when they fix their Cuban coffee. But that's just another way to do it, my friend.
Okay, that's a new one for me. But, you know, I'm thinking that anyone who is a coffee lover, like many of us are, have found a lot of unusual and creative ways to make coffee. So we could have a TNT on that one. And it's really an art to making coffee sometimes. But it doesn't have to be an art. It just has to be black coffee with caffeine to take care of the need. So with that, any more comments or any comments on coffee? Any comments on any subject we've covered tonight? We're talking about things that you might want to have on hand that you might not have thought about, or what you wished that you had when you went through a power outage. Anyone else with any tips, items, or experiences? Anyone anywhere? KJ4 WKD here. Come aboard and join us now.
Good evening, everybody. Correct call sign is Kilo Juliet 4, Victor Foxtrot Bravo. John over in Port Orange, and yeah, I know George there pretty well, and I just happened to be listening here or whatever, heard you talking about the coffee, and another method that I use, I'm right in the process right now, just got cleaned up after work and a little workout in the shop, and I'm making my coffee. I actually roast my own coffee beans. I roast them. When they're ready, I grind them fresh, and I use what's called a vacuum brewer. And it's powered off a little alcohol lamp there. And can I get your call sign there? I think it's Jim or what. I heard George in there. KK4WKE, am I anywhere close, Jim?
Any further comments? Interested, really interested in your vacuum brewer. You'll have to send us an email or something with some description on that. That sounds really interesting. And I really seriously thought about getting into roasting. We'll move on and try to transition away from coffee at this point and talk some more about what you could have on hand. And George mentioned earlier in the program tonight about the yard lighting. It's 12 volt. You can also, and a lot of people might not know this, you can go to a electrical supply house such as Gray Bar or Westinghouse Electric Supply or General Electric Supply or an independent somewhere in your neighborhood or your town, and you can usually find 12 volt DC bulbs that actually screw into a standard lamp socket. And if you had a few of those on hand, you could power those with an automotive battery. And what I would like to have, what I want to add to my shack, and it would come in handy for a lot of different things, but let me reset a second, would be a 12-volt car battery and a trickle charger that I could have sitting here. And I could run the shack, and I could run you know, a lot of other things with it in the event that I needed to. But it's, I don't know, for $100, you wouldn't need a big heavy-duty battery. You can get I'd get the largest that you won't put money into. And Harbor Freight, for about $39.95 on sale, runs sells a trickle charger. So, you know, $100 or so, $100 and a half, let's say $100 and a half or more, or around that, you could have emergency power on hand. 12 volts will do a lot of things for you. And with that, there's a few more things on the list, and I'm sure others out there have some.
Siri, United Zulu, you were talking about 12-volt batteries, and that made me think of something else that I had to do, which was charge my cell phone in the car because I had no electricity. Fortunately, I had a car charger for my cell phone, which I probably would put on the list for most people. So at least you know you'll have a cell phone service if you have cell phone service in your area. But another thing that I discovered recently was battery eliminators for your HT, which is kind of like a cell phone charger set up there. It replaces your battery and it plugs into your cigarette lighter, just like the cell phone charger. So maybe you can address that, because I think you are a proponent of battery eliminators. But those are two things that I found very helpful, and I would put in my emergency when the lights go out kit. But that's all I'd like to add at this moment. So I'm going to send it back to you, Jim. This is N1SUZ, back to KJ4WKD.
Well, thank you for that, Susie. And I was wondering where you heard about battery eliminators. But, yeah, I have a battery eliminator for the HTs that I have. One of them I use quite a bit, and it stays on the battery eliminator here in the shack, and it's wired into the into a power supply, and that's the way I use it stationary. And, of course, I have one for the, well, it's the same thing. It plugs into the cigarette lighter in the car. for mobile use. So they are very, very handy for your HT. And I was going to mention cell phone extra batteries for your cell phone. Now, I know that the smartphones, I know the iPhone, I don't think you can change a battery. Or put a, and you have an iPhone, Susie. Maybe you can tell us that. But maybe you can't add a have a spare battery for one of those. But my phone, in fact, I have spare batteries for my cell phone. It's not a smartphone. It does a lot of things, but it isn't a smartphone. But I can have some charged batteries on hand and extra batteries for your HT. And HTs, we're all hands here, so HTs, you can get those things really, really inexpensively. And we were talking about staying in touch with your circle of friends. And if you're in the club, in the ham club, or have a group of hams that you know and the repeater's up, then you can stay in contact and maybe get some help or provide help for others through the local network of ham radio on your HT. And even talk simplex in many cases to a lot of people. It's amazing how far you can talk simplex on an HT with 5 watts. And then, of course, if you have a base unit with a lot of power, like 50 or 60 or 65 watts, you can run that on your indoor car battery as well, or in your car, and you can communicate there. So ham radio, when everything else fails, is going to be there for us. But like everything else, you have to prepare for that with prepare properly with power to run the devices and the rigs and all of that that we have. They're worthless if you don't have any power. So let me reset again. And we're into the second hour, about 10 minutes into the second hour, so we're doing well. But let me open the floor up for any other contributions or anyone. Come back in and tell us what else we might be forgetting on our list, or you might want to elaborate on any of the things we've covered already. KJ4 WKD with the TNT Open Forum. The floor is open.
Sierra United Zulu.
Lima Charlie Bravo.
Susie, N1SUZ, KJ4 WKD here, inviting you back.
Well, thank you, Jim. I just wanted to make a quick comment about the iPhone. You are correct. We cannot change the batteries on the iPhone. The only way to charge the battery is to charge the battery, and the only way to do that is with a car charger or an electrical outlet. So, unfortunately, I can't buy a spare battery. So, fortunately, I bought a car charger, and like I said, it worked great. I went out to the car in the middle of the night and charged my battery while I was trying to sleep, and got up in the morning to have a battery. But, yes, having an HT with extra battery backup is a good idea, too. And the local repeater around here actually was active during that storm so that you could actually check in with the guys around here at the Candlewood Amateur Radio Association. And if you were in need of help, someone might be able to help you out there, too. So there's always the repeaters open, hopefully. So back to you, Jim. This is N1SUZ.
And George, LCB, is waiting patiently. George, and I see you talked about a 12-volt coffee maker in the text box. So, give us the rest of the story, George. Come back with us.
Well, thank you, Jim. Yeah, there's a whole lot more to that story, Jim, a 12-volt system there. And, you know, even if you only have a half a tank of gas in your car, you know, if you're only confined to one vehicle, that'll keep you going. But if you're fortunate enough to have your little power generator there, and Miss Susie, that word can't. I don't know about that. You know, you could always get your right voltage. I don't know if it's 4.4 volts at 600 milliamps or not for that charger there. But there's always a way to charge that phone, you know, if you don't have the right credentials. Just wrap a wire around the end of it and hold it and get your right voltage, get you enough to make your phone call. But the 12-volt system, there's so many things on the market today that works off in 12-volt. Great day. Look at all the utensils in these motorhomes. I've got a little microwave that will run off in 12-volt. And, any time you get, you see one of these appliances on sale or at a flea market, it's good to have them. You can buy connections that goes, that clips on your battery that has two sockets for two individual connectors to go to some type of appliance, or you could even put one of those connectors on the end of a power strip, and go into a great day. I'm searching for the name of it there, but it changes 12 volt into AC. And not a whole lot of amps coming out, but a different low amperage draws that would handle it. And that vehicle will idle forever, and like I said, also a generator. But there's a whole lot of stuff in the 12-volt realm that can be utilized in a case of emergency there. 12-volt fans, if you get uptight and it's too cold for a fan, we'll pull the blade off and tie you a beater on there and use it as an electric mixer. I mean, there's always, you can always come up with something if you take your time and think it out. KW4 Lima, Charlie Bravo.
Well, thanks, George. More great information. I was thinking, you pass by on the street around town, these RV supply houses, and that sounds to me as if it might be a great place to go and look for 12-volt appliances. I bet they have a house full of them. And Susie, if you got that, a 12-volt battery, I know you had one for field day, on hand and charged up, a couple of hefty clamps for your battery, and then some small alligator clips on the other end of a couple of wires, maybe red and black, just to be sure, red and white maybe. And you can put those alligator clips right onto your charger, your car charger, the positive and the negative side, and charge the battery in the house without having to go out in the cold, if you do have that battery and it's ready for use and you have the leads ready to use. And I think that, what is it, an inverter that changes DC to AC, or is it the other way around? I may be wrong. I know Gordon's going to correct me on that one. But, George, you mentioned generators. I want to turn it over. Now, generators I wanted to save and talk about after we talked about a lot of other things, but I'd like to turn it over to Gordon. And generators are a portable generator for home use would be a great investment. Once you've paid for it one time, you've got it there, you can break it out and put it to work when you need it. I don't know a lot about them. I've never owned one, and how to wire them. I know you can hardwire them, but I probably wouldn't try to do that. I think I could, but you don't want to do it unless you really have some electrical experience. What size would you need to run things like your refrigerator and your lighting? What should you try to get? How many kW? And whether or not you want 120 volt or or 240 volt. And another important thing is safety, like proper ventilation and electrical safety. So let me throw it over to KY6V, and I'm sure he is savvy on generators. So Gordon, how about preaching to us a little bit about home portable generators, sir? KJ4WKD here with the TNT Open Forum.
Well, thank you, Jim. This is a subject very dear to my heart, and I appreciate being brought aboard. What I would comment here are things to think about. but not necessarily in any particular order. Yeah, and you mentioned safety, and that's really primary. Jim, the generator should be sized to handle your needs, and that's something that you have to determine. And these needs may need to be scheduled, so not everything is running in your house at the same time. I'll try and get into that in just a little bit. It's an important thought and an important procedure. The generator needs to be outside, so the outside air will help to dissipate the generator exhaust fumes. If left inside, it would be harmful and fatal results can happen. You don't want to see that take place. The AC connection cable from the generator should be as short as practical, yet utilizing a wire size to handle the current draw anticipated. It is recommended that the cable be wired into your distribution box. Don't just plug that cable into one of your house sockets because you're not going to get everything you need. And most importantly, the incoming circuit breaker to that distribution box needs to be turned off before you turn your generator on. Let me buy a nickel here, Jim. Both 120 service and 240 service should be considered for your needs, and will take a generator capable of supplying these needs, obviously. Remember that your well pump, if you have a well, air conditioner, oven, dryer, things of that nature require 240 volts to function. Not just 120. You don't want to have a generator that's only pumping out 120, or some of your systems are not going to function. You should, and most people never get around to doing this, and I'm going to exclamation point that. Know your house needs. Guys and gals, know your house needs. A television uses 120 watts when running. Obviously, each 100-watt light that you have on draws 100 watts. Try not to use the air conditioner, and it's a biggie on current consumption. Use floor fans if required. An oven, the clothes dryer, the water heater are all biggies in drawing the current off of this generator. So you want to do that sparingly. Don't try to run all of these devices at the same time on this poor generator. If you do, the generator will stall, the circuit breaker may trip, and the end result, well, you'll be in the dark, in the darkness of the night. Let me buy a nickel here, Jim, and I'll conclude this little epistle. Things that I think that everybody should think about. Things to have knowledge of. 16-gauge wire handles 10 amps. 14-gauge wire handles 15 amps. 12-gauge wire handles 20 amps. And 10-gauge wire handles 30 amps. So now you just figure out where you have to go from there. A 2.5 or 2.4 kW generator gives you 20 amps. A 3.6 kW generator will give you 30 amps. A 7.5 kilowatt generator gives you 60 amps. So now what does your house need? How many things do you need to have on at the same time? Can you delegate what you need at a particular time to take care of the generator's capabilities? So, in summary, know your house needs, know how to apportion these needs at different times to get the job done. I'm going to give you an example. If your family wants to take a hot shower, turn all other electrical users off. Heat the water tank, the hot water tank. Then tell everyone to take a quick shower as the last one in may have a cold water. And that's it in summary. Jim, back to you. KY6V, over.
Well, thanks, Gordon. I really appreciate you covering that. And you had some dropouts in your transmissions, and we missed some of it. But the important things I think we heard, and I didn't hear you covered, you might have. We know better than to do a clothes dryer and those things or try to use the oven, hopefully. The refrigerator, though, is important, and I don't know off the top of my head how many amps are that a refrigerator will pull when it fires up and while it's running. Did you cover that maybe while you were dropped out, or can you cover that now for us, KY6V?
Yeah, I'm noticing some dropouts here, too, at least on this computer that I'm on, Jim. I apologize for that. I don't know if it's the computer or the incoming ISP. No, I didn't cover the refrigerator specifically. Normally speaking, I like to use a 7 to 7.5 kW generator that is capable of both 240-volt output and 120. It covers all your needs that you can really conceive of. Under normal operation without the frills on, the oven on, the air conditioner on, and that kind of stuff, air conditioners you really ought to stay away from, Jim, because use some floor fans or something like that. The air conditioners just draw a hellacious amount of energy off the generator. But I have routinely run a refrigerator, a normal house lighting, televisions, and so on a 7 kW generator without any problem whatsoever. And then when I had to get into the big horsepower, I turned off the television, I turned off the lights, and I let the refrigerator figure out what it was going to do.
Think about it this way, Jim, and guys and gals that are listening. You know, the older homes used to be breakered for incoming service at 100 amps. In today's age, the newer homes just can't hack 100 amps, and you normally have a minimum of 150, but more likely a 200-amp breaker coming into your house. And if you have a generator that's trying to feed this service, you're just not going to get it. It's just not there to be had. So the important thing here is that if you took the time to determine, and this is not a hard task to do, determine how much current, therefore how much wattage is being used by your appliances. I'm talking about your lights, I'm talking about your water heater, I'm talking about your washer and dryer, I'm talking about your air conditioner, I'm talking about your oven, and off yourself a game. I'm recommending a 7 to a 7.5 kW generator that you can switch back and forth in the area of the house that you need to keep things going during this power outage. And this can be done. Now, a lot of people won't do that. And what you're going to do is you're going to end up finding out that you're going to have too much stuff online for that generator. The generator is going to start choking. It's going to start lugging. And the circuit breaker is going to start popping, and you're going to be dark in the middle of the night. Go ahead, Jim, KY6V, over.
I'm thinking that all of us here are, as ham radio operators, we should know how to do the arithmetic and figure out what we can run with our generator. You make a very good point about switching off, you know. You don't run them all at the same time. You pick what you need at a given time, and you run that only. And, lighting is not a big problem, but some of the appliances, like a refrigerator or whatever, you know, they just draw a lot of current. So you've got to be careful. But average people who are not ham radio operators many times don't know that. So, it's going to you've got to be prudent with the use of the generator. And I would agree, and I think everyone would agree, that the bigger the generator that you can have, the better off you're going to be. Great stuff, Gordon. Thank you for accepting that challenge. Put you on the spot to come aboard and talk about generators, and you did a fascinating, erudite, professional job of presenting that to us, and thank you as always. So let me just cover off a couple more things that you might want to have on the list, and some of these are pretty obvious. We mentioned, let's see, where are we on the list? Okay, a charged up fire extinguisher you should have all of the time. It doesn't matter whether you have a power outage or not, but it's maybe a good idea to have a fire extinguisher for sure when you're playing with matches or doing some things outside with fire, or even inside with fire. Of course, a first aid kit. I always say if you take medications, you always want to have those on hand a week's worth. Something as simple as blankets, quilts, or sleeping bags. A lot of people have plenty of heat in their homes, and they don't have maybe a lot of bed covers. So you need to have those, whether you use them all the time or not. And talking about refrigeration, some cheap styrofoam coolers. You can nest those inside one another and help to preserve your food if you don't have power for the refrigerator a longer period of time. If you have some coolers, maybe your picnic cooler that you use anyway, and some extra styrofoam coolers. And then we mentioned the portable generator. So with that, that's about all I have on the list of things that I wanted to contribute.
This is N1SUZ, and I just wanted to thank Gordon for his talk about generators, because I think it's really important, and safety is a big issue. We just had an unfortunate event with somebody who lives near here, an older gentleman. He had his generator in the house. He actually had it in the garage, and the muffler, I guess, backed up, and he died from carbon monoxide poisoning because it filled the house without him knowing it. And the reason why he had it in his garage was because during the storm, generators are a rare thing to be able to find, and he was afraid that someone would steal his generator if he had it outside. So it's very important to talk about safety, and I thank you, Gordon, for doing that. And as far as generators go, this morning Lowe's just got in 200 generators, and they were all gone by this afternoon. So anyway, back to you, Jim. This is N1SUZ, back to KJ4WKD.
Thanks, Susie. Thank you, as always. And that was tragic. That's just you would think that these are things you think everybody is aware of, and then you learn something. You hear a tragic story like that, and that's it just makes you wonder, and that's really sad. Just to keep somebody from stealing his generator, he put it in the garage, and I guess that was an attached garage, and the carbon monoxide got into the house. So, wow, that's too bad. One of the first things that Gordon said was safety, and put the generator outside. You've got to have it outside. It's got to be ventilated. Those things put out a lot of, you don't see it if it's not smoking, but carbon monoxide is invisible, and it will kill you dead. Okay, with that, anybody else have any anything else for the good of the order, for the good of the forum here tonight? Come aboard now.
Yeah, Lima, Charlie, bravo to throw one more feather down.
KW4LCB from KJ4WKD.
Well, thank you, Jim. There, just want to make a comment on the generators, and no matter if it's a generator or your car or whatever, you know, when it's timed, you know, you need to shut it down and do the maintenance, check the oil. You know, some of them you can run for 2 or 3 days, won't use a drop of oil. But there's some of the older ones that does. So, you've got to do a maintenance a schedule on it, so you can shut everything down to make sure you got your good oil capacity filled there. And if it looks like it's about worked itself to death, all it takes is one screw to unscrew that thing, you know, and put you some new oil in there. And also there, most of these light fixtures, ceilings have two bulbs. So, you know, to save the generator a little bit, just unscrew one. Just back it off a little bit so it doesn't light up when the switch is being flipped there. And, you know, that's where Gordon cut out the first time when he started to mention about make sure you have it outside. But, you know, the closer that you can get to what you're going to feed, if you're going to feed through your main type distribution panel, well, you know, the closer that you can get your generator to your feed point, the better. That's probably what he was getting ready to talk about when he dropped out on us. But that's just a couple other things to throw in there, Jim. TW4 Lima, Charlie Bravo.
Thank you, George. Yeah, good idea about taking some of the bulbs out and your light bulbs to cut it back. You don't need that much light necessarily. And if you're going through your distribution center, your load center, you want to be sure and disconnect, I would think, the main breaker and come through the bus bars, because a couple of things could happen. You don't want the power to come back on while you're in there. Another thing, you could feed your power back through the line, and you might zap somebody, one of the power company workers, by doing that. So you really, if you don't understand about that part of it, call an electrician and have something set up that's already set up that you can plug into if you're going to use your generator like that. With that, let me put out a final call to the open forum tonight before we close it down. KJ4WKD with the TNT Open Forum on surviving camping out in your own home during a power outage. Anyone, anywhere.
Victor, Queen Victor. Thank you. I try to make the Thursday night sessions. Tonight, my condo where I live had the annual budget review for next year, and that was kind of important. And I am really, really ticked off that I missed the first part, because camping out in your own home is what a great topic. Whoever picked that, congratulations. So now, I just heard a couple comments. Let me take a nickel here. KB3 Victor, Queen Victor, name is Chris in Philly, PA. On the topic of generators, Murphy's Law can work both ways. And I've heard stories, I have no documentation, but the fastest way to get your electric on, the electric from the utility, is to go out and buy a new generator. Spend the money, bring it home, get ready to set it up, and then, bingo, your lights come on. Now, that makes that generator used, and some stores have a 30-day policy. So it's a good time, like after everybody has their power back, to go looking for a used generator, because sometimes you can get a new one for a used price. Anyway, that was one comment. The other thing, inverters. I currently have a Xantrex that boosts 12 volts up to 110 or 117. And hold on, let me buy one more nickel. That's a $250 gadget. I also have a Magnum that's designed to conform with PURPA. That's the public utility requirement to purchase electricity from anybody that wants to sell it back. And that has built-in safety protection, so you don't accidentally electrocute, you know, a repairman who's, you know, shoot 3,000 watts into him when he thinks he's working with a clean line. So those are my comments. I'm sorry I missed a lot of it. If I repeated, if I overlapped anybody else, mea culpa. KB3 Victor, Quebec Victor, back to net control.
Well, thanks, Chris. No, I don't think you repeated anything. Good information from you. And I forgot what I was going to comment on the generator again, but thanks for getting here and getting your comments in. And by the way, at some point we'll have this recording up on the website, or a link to the recording at WaveGuide's website. So I'm not sure how long that will take, but it'll show up at some point, and you can listen to the whole thing later, because there's a lot of good information in this one. With that, anyone else want to wrap it up for us?
Six Victor with a parley for Chris.
Okay, Gordon, Six Victor, KY6V, go ahead with your contact with Chris.
Well, I hope my internet holds up. Thank you very much, Jim. Hey, Chris, good evening, KY6V here. Let me say this about that. I had the pleasure or dissatisfaction of going through Hurricane Andrew in 1992 down in Miami. I was right in the middle of it. We had power out for 6 weeks. I had four generators keeping me alive. And the moment that I purchased those, the lights did not come on, Chris. Over. All right. Did I lose it again, Jim? Over.
You know, it works both ways. So how many generators do you still have? Did you return any of them, or did you still have them now for, emergency power backup? KB3 Victor, Quebec Victor.
Well, you know, that's a long story, Chris. I would answer it this way. I had a generator in the motorhome that we were living in because the roof had been blown off the house. I had three generators that came in from CBS, who I was working for at that time. I had to return the three. I still have the one. Over.
Now, when you returned the three, did you get your money back, or did they hit you with a, I guess now the lingo is a restock fee of, I don't know, 10 or 15%. How did you make out financially on that transaction?
Well, sir, I think you misunderstood my comment. I had been with CBS for many, many years. They took care of their employees during the Miami Andrew hurricane. They supplied me with three additional generators above and beyond what I had in the motorhome. Kept the entire home facility going until we got electricity back about 6 weeks after the start of the fight. I just returned them. It didn't cost me anything to get them. It didn't cost me anything to turn them back. It doesn't cost me anything now. Over.
KB3, Victor, Quebec Victor. I think I misunderstood. I think you were saying CB, Columbia Broadcasting System. At first you said CVS, like the drugstore chain. And if they provided that, hats off to them as a corporation. Hello.
I think we got it cleared. Columbia Broadcasting System, one of the major networks, not the pharmaceutical chain. Jim, back to you, KY6V, over.
Okay, thanks, Gordon, and thanks, Chris, KB3VQV. So the last order of business, I think, is to send it back to Susie, N1SUZ, and so we can learn about next week's TNT. N1SUZ, KJ4WKD, come back and tell us what's happening here on TNT next week.
Well, thank you, Jim. This is N1SUZ, and thanks for a great program tonight, Jim. Really, really helpful information, a lot of good information. Thanks, Gordon, KY6V, and thank you very much, George, KW4 Lima Charlie Bravo, for your contributions tonight, and thanks everybody for their contributions. Very informative, and it'll be a great net to remember in the future. And hopefully, when we're lights out, we'll know what to do now, and lots of information there. And before I stop talking about tonight's program, you anyone can also go to www.ready.gov and can look up information about what to prepare yourselves with for Lights Out. They have a checklist there, as well as the Red Cross. www.redcross.org also has a checklist available that you can pin to your bulletin boards if you need to. So that's the last thing about tonight's program. This week's TNT was about how to prepare for an emergency when the lights go out. Next week's TNT is about preparing yourself for a different kind of emergency, saving someone's life. Saving Life Through CPR, a course everyone should take. I will have Cindy Casadecchia, an American Heart Association certified CPA trainer who I work with. She's going to come aboard next week and talk to our members about CPR and life-saving techniques and what you need to do to get your CPR license and how to do CPR. Plus, I am going to get recertified on the air and show everyone what actually is involved in doing the practical part of the exam, or what we call working with the CPR dummy. And it's just one part of getting your CPR license and certificate, and that's what we're going to do next week. And I think everybody should come aboard, and it'll be really exciting. And she will field questions as well as myself, and we'll just talk about different things. CPR is for everyone. And there's adult CPR. Cindy also trains for infant CPR. I have been trained in animal CPR, dog CPR, actually, so that we can save the lives of our furry little friends as well. There is a certificate for that. So that is what next week's TNT is going to be about. And I'm going to have the dummy in the shack, and Cindy's going to go step by step of what I should do to save that dummy's life. But that's next week. And thanks, Jim, for letting me mention it. So this is N1SUZ, and I will send it back to you, Jim, KJ4WKD.
Thank you, Susie. And I'll certainly be there next week, here next week as well. I've taken the course a couple of times, and I'm not, my certification has expired as well. Now, yeah, I remember kissing some of those dummies and, you know, saving their lives, yeah, but I've got to get back and get recertified, too, because that's important. And I think that some of the techniques since I took the course the last time have changed, so that's, and those of you out there who have gone through the course and think you know how to do it, well, there's been some changes, some new recommendations, so I'm not sure exactly what they all are, but we'll find out next week on TNT. And thank you, Susie, for being my backup tonight, and especially for snagging that new member in the text box. I'm not as diligent in the text box when I'm NCS, so thank you for that, and Kathy will be proud of you for that. And if I can impose on you once more, if you'll put those websites in the text box for those who want to jot those down and go to them for the Red Cross and the, you know, what was the other one, preparedness information for power outage. I looked at one of them today, and I think it was the Red Cross, and it has specifically for power outage. And we've covered most of those things, but you can see them in print if you'll go to those websites. If you'll put those in, we'd appreciate it. Okay. With that, we'll close the official part of the net and turn the server back over to anyone who wants to do something else here on the server. But let me see what I'm officially supposed to say. Okay, here we go. I'm doing really well with my screens tonight. My printer's down, so I can't print anything and read from it. And I'm on top of it tonight, though. So let me say, in closing, this has been South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service, VOIP. There's a period there. VOIP net schedules and general information may be found on the VOIP.southcars.com website. Your net control for this session has been Jim, and my call is KJ4WKD. And I am saying goodbye and closing this VOIP session. Thanks, everyone, for your participation, And 73 to everyone. Have a good weekend coming up, and join us on all of the nets this weekend and going forward. The TNT Open Forum is now officially closed on the server, and the repeaters are returned to normal amateur use. 73.